Welcome, everybody, to Psychology of Tshuva Part 3. Today, we'll be talking about maintaining change. My name is Mordechai Schiffman, an assistant rabbi at Azrieli Graduate School of Jewish Education, assistant rabbi at Kingsway Jewish Center. Website, psychedfortorah.com, if you enjoy the combination of psychology and Torah. So today, for those who were with us for the past two parts of the series, great. For those who weren't, we will do a brief recap, and that will probably be beneficial for those who were as well. So what we have seen so far is we have overviewed what's called the stages of change model, which is an important psychological theory that's been put to the test, used in various therapies, including something called motivational interviewing, which helps with treating addictions and general helps with behavior change. What we have suggested is that if we look at the different stages of change, we can A, map them onto the Yamim Noraim seasons, as well as then go through each stage and find Torah overlaps with the concepts. And perhaps by combining the psychology and the Torah together, we can make everlasting change for our tshuva process throughout the Yamim Noraim this year and upcoming years as well. So the way that it works is that we start with the pre-contemplation stage. This was when we are not really thinking about changing. That's probably how we are, unfortunately, throughout most of the year. Once Elul comes along, we start thinking about change. We contemplate it. We're not ready to change, but we know that it exists. We're not ready to commit. Rosh Hashanah, I argue, overlaps with the preparation stage, where we really sit down and start taking notice, getting ready for the change, not just thinking about it, but not ready to take action yet, but really solidifying our commitment. Then Aseres Yemei Teshuva is when we have the action phase, where we start changing, actively doing different actions. That's all four that we spoke about in the previous 2 weeks. Today, what I want to speak about is maintenance stage and relapse stage. So maintenance stage, which is often overlooked, once we go into action stage and we start making some changes for a day, for 2 days, for a week, then we tend to go back and relapse without spending the requisite time and energy within the maintenance stage. And then what do we do when we relapse? Do we go back, get back onto the tshuva process, or do we give up? So that's what we're going to be addressing today. The main parts of the previous four stages, we'll just review the strategies that help us move from one stage to the other. So when we're in the pre-contemplation stage, we're not ready to start thinking about changing. One of the ways to start getting to contemplation is through consciousness raising, just by reading, exploring, learning as much as we can about the topic that we're trying to change, whether it be mitzvos, averos, exercise, alcohol, whatever it is, as well as using relationships to help us through, to push us through the processes. The truth is that's not just for the pre-contemplation stage. Having helping relationships is important throughout all of the stages. Then once we get to the contemplation stage and we start thinking, ways to move us to the preparation stage is through emotional arousal, to really imagine ourselves changing, imagine how bad things will be if we don't change, watch movies that talk about changing and really pump us up, get us ready, listen to a good shir, a good drasha that gets us ready and emotionally, not just cognitively ready for change, but get our emotions involved as well. And here's really where we start a sincere self-reevaluation, a cheshbon ha-nefesh, to be able to fully understand what the sin or what the bad behavior, the bad habit is doing to us, how it's affecting us, why it's affecting us. That begins in the contemplation stage and then continues in a more serious way in the preparation stage, where we try to increase the amount of pros of changing, the benefits of changing. We try to highlight those and we try to increase the cons of not changing. And we overall try to increase our confidence and commitment. That's what the preparation stage is supposed to do. And then once we feel confident, we feel we're committed, we feel ready, we have a game plan, we know what we're going to do, we know what's going to stop us, and we're ready to overcome it, that's when we go in the action phase of changing. And during the action phase, where we actually start putting our change into into account, there are three things that we spoke about that are important to keep in mind. Number one is countering, which means that I need another behavior to compensate for the behavior that I'm trying to change. So for example, if I am trying to quit smoking, then I might want to, we focused on exercise last week because exercise is a really good countering strategy, relaxation. I need to be able to insert something else to compensate for the fact that the behavior that I was doing played a part, an important part in my life, even though it was damaging to me. And now I need to be able to do something else to counter those urges that get me to want to do what I was doing that was hurting me. Second is environmental control, meaning it's not just about willpower, that if I put myself in whatever situation I want, I can control myself. Rather, we need to change our environment, adapt our environment so that we are setting ourselves up for as much success as possible. That means if we're trying to lose weight, not keeping the junk food in the house, not keeping cues that are going to remind us of the things that cause us problems, putting up guards and filters, the Asu Siagla Torah aspect of Pirkei Avos, as well as Chazal in general, tell us to control our environment well. And then finally, there's the reward system, that the behavior that we were doing that we don't want anymore probably functioned to give us some level of positive reinforcement. It felt good. And part of trying to increase an alternative behavior is actually rewarding ourselves for that good behavior, whether that means literally paying ourselves if we do something good, or whether it means just giving ourselves a good pat on the back, the ability to talk to ourselves positively, to commend our actions. A lot of times when people change, they have trouble telling themselves they're doing a good job. They feel weird about it. They feel bad about it. This should be so simple. Why do I need to congratulate myself? Well, part of the change process is being able to learn and be comfortable with rewarding, complimenting, being proud of the change that we are doing. So that is a brief recap of the first four stages. And the reason why we're recapping it is because on some level, these all will play a part in the maintenance stage. So in maintenance, we're mainly maintaining the previous processes. That means that all of the strategies that we have built up until now need to continue to happen on some level. We need to continue to review and analyze any challenges that we're having to change. We're not in the clear. It's not over. If anything, this is the real work, is to keep this maintenance throughout the long term. Remind ourselves of the negatives of the past behavior. And this happens often, that we are motivated to change because the negative behaviors have been so detrimental to us. Then once we start changing, which is good, we feel better and we forget how bad it was beforehand. So we let our guard down, and we'll speak about that in much more detail soon. And part of the process of maintenance is to go back to the stages of weighing the pros and the cons, and to remind ourselves of all of the cons of maintaining the negative behavior and reviewing the pros of changing to the positive behavior. As we mentioned, it's important to continue to take credit for our accomplishments, remind ourselves that we're doing a good job, congratulate ourselves, have somebody else congratulate you, find a cheerleader, as it were, who's able to give you a good compliment when you follow through on your goals. It's important to not have somebody who's too on top of you, where that develops into an unhealthy relationship, where if you don't do well, they might criticize you too much. So that's an important relationship issue to keep in mind. We could talk about that at a different point in time. But for the most part, assuming the relationship is healthy, having somebody to help and yourself as well congratulate you for your accomplishments is very important. We have to keep up the environmental control, keeping any changes to the environment that were beneficial. We can't let our guard down. If we spent a week being good on our diet and we didn't bring the things into the house, oh, well, I'm good for a week. So now I can start bringing it in. I'll be okay. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine. And that's when we are going to run into our problems, because again, we're letting our guard down. All of the environmental control that we put into place for the action phase needs to be maintained. Countering also, all those good habits that we're trying to include, the exercising, the relaxation, we need to keep that up during the maintenance stage, because once we stop doing those things, again, the old habits will come back relatively soon. They're so ingrained and they're so enticing that unless we keep up our positive behavior, our countering behavior, our environmental control, complementing ourselves, we will probably eventually relapse. As well as paying attention to our defense mechanisms, which we spoke about in depth in the first shear that we did, all of the distortions of thinking that we have that entice us to, you know, we might conceptualize it as the Yetzer Hara, that entice us to get to that sin and to go back to the sin during our maintenance, our action stage. We tend to do well with those. We're able to talk back to our desires. We're able to say, no, I'm not going to listen to you because I know you're just trying to trick me and I know you're trying to hurt me. But then eventually, again, if we let our guard down, we're not going to beat that. So we have to continue to pay attention to all of the weird and challenging thoughts that are going to go through our head that tend to lead us down the wrong direction. These are all important for the maintenance phase. What are the threats to maintenance? So to some extent, we've alluded to them, but it's important to spell them out explicitly. So Prochaska and Clemente outline three main threats to maintenance. Number one is social pressures. We're trying to control our drinking. We go to shul. There's lots of alcohol. We're trying to control our food. We go to shul. There's a kiddush. We're trying to exercise, and then there's social pressure to go do something that doesn't have exercise. So there's lots of social pressures that can be a threat to our ability to continue the change. And for that, we just have to keep in mind the advice from Pirkei Avos is harchek mishachein ra, to stay away from bad influences. Now, bad influences sometimes are black and white. Sometimes it's clear that this is a bad influence and that I should stay away from that person. But more often than not, it's a subtle bad influence. And it might not be a bad influence at all points in time, but it might be a bad influence and in certain circumstances and certain situations. So we have to be aware of the social pressures around us and be able to, A, increase our assertiveness to be able to say, you know, no, thank you, I'm not going to eat that. No, thank you, I'm not going to drink that. I appreciate it, but to increase that assertiveness is important, as well as to know how to avoid and not put yourself in situations where there will be that social pressure to drink if or to eat or to do whatever if you're going to feel that you're not going to be able to sustain that social pressure. So very important to keep in mind what the social relationships we have are doing to our bad habits, and hopefully surround us with people who actually give positive social pressure for the good habits, and put ourselves in different groups that are trying to change and trying to grow can be something that's beneficial. The second threat to maintenance is special situations, which is just the exceptions. And there's always exceptions. I know I personally have tried to, every once in a while, I'll go on very strong, let me eat healthy. And then all of a sudden there's this exception, you know, there's a bar mitzvah, and it's a smorgasbord. How can I turn down a smorgasbord? Or there's, you know, there's so many reasons why there are going to be an exceptions that the exceptions end up becoming most of the time. But besides for the fact that if you have 1, 2, 3 exceptions over the course of a week, over 2 weeks, then any change you're trying to actually impact in the long run is just going to keep getting pushed off and pushed off and pushed off. So it's really important to keep in mind that even special situations need to be taken into account, and perhaps it's not worth changing your good behavior because of this unique special circumstance. And then finally, what I think is probably the most important to keep in mind is internal challenges. And that are the things that go inside of us, on inside of our brains, inside of our minds, our emotions, that get in the way of our maintenance stage. Three things. Number one, daily temptation. If we continually expose ourselves, this gets back to environmental control, but if we continue to expose ourselves to the thing that we're trying to change and we keep tempting ourselves over and over and over again, eventually we will fail. It's just going to happen. We cannot, it goes back to not relying totally on willpower. So to the extent that we continually to expose ourselves, and some people do this, some people say, oh, I'm just going to keep this drink in my drawer to prove to myself that I'm not going to give into it, or I'm going to keep this cookie here to show myself how much willpower I have. Well, that might work for a day. It might work for 2 days, or even more likely, it might work for the first 8 hours of the day, but it's not going to work at 10 o'clock at night, because at that point your willpower is depleted and you're not going to be able to beat it. So daily temptations is really important to keep in mind. We saw last week the Rambam, Misrachik Harbe Min Adavar Shechata, stay far away from the things that are tempting. Number two, in terms of internal challenge, is self-blame. This is really, really important. Oftentimes when we do something wrong, this will lead us also into the relapse discussion. When we do something wrong or we mess up, we can be really, really hard on ourselves. And so there's a certain subtype of people who, when they mess up, they're so in the pre-contemplation stage that they have so many defense mechanisms that they're oblivious to the fact that they mess up. Then there's a whole other subtype of people, I don't know which one you or your friends might fall into, who blame themselves for everything and put themselves down and call themselves names and really look at themselves with such negative self-esteem and such low self-esteem, negative self-evaluations, that itself then becomes the real problem. Because for some reason, our brains think, it's maybe back to the Yetzer Hara, maybe back to the way that we've been raised, things we've read, things we've listened to, that the way to get somebody to change is by putting them down as much as you can. If you just put yourself down just enough, then eventually you'll change. And unfortunately, that's not how it works. The more we put ourselves down, the more likely it is that we will continue to stay down. And that's brought out in the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. The Mishnah says, "Al tehi rasha b'fnei atzmecha." Don't be wicked in your own eyes. And if you look at the various commentaries, the Machzor Vitri talks about this, the Meiri talks about it in his Chibur HaTshuva, is that once I look at myself as being wicked, as being bad, as being so negative, that evaluation becomes so part of me, then I will end up doing more sins or falling farther into the trap that I'm trying to get myself out of. So it's really important to monitor our self-talk. How are we talking to ourselves about our mess-ups? If we are totally putting ourselves down, that will, first of all, it's not healthy for our emotions, but just from a functional level, it's not going to help the change process. It's going to make the change process even more difficult to go through. So we want to monitor, make sure we're not calling ourselves names. We're not losers. We're not failures. We are people who might be struggling, and we're going to try our best to continue to change for the better. And then finally, the last internal challenge to maintenance is overconfidence, or what's sometimes called in the more recent literature, the restraint bias. And for this, we'll have a whole slide on just this one. So let's do a little bit of learning. We start with the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says, "Averos shehisvada aleim b'yom ha-kippurim zeh, chozer umisvada aleim b'yom ha-kippurim acher, afa pishu omed b'tshuvaso." So let's say I did a sin last year. And last Yom Kippur came along, and I did tshuva for it. I did vidui, I confessed it, and I was actually successful. I haven't messed up on that sin for over a year. I've maintained throughout. Yom Kippur now comes along. Do I have to repent or confess, as he talks about, for that previous sin? So there's a debate in the Gemara. The Rambam says that we do. You have to repeat the sin. So what really is cut, you have to repeat the verbalization of that sin. What really comes out is that in theory, you could have done a sin when you were 13 years old and then be still talking about it. Even if you haven't done it in 80 years, you can still be talking about it when you're 93, right? So that, because according to the Rambam, you continue to confess that sin. So what's the reason for that? Why would I have to keep confessing the sin? And perhaps one way of looking at it is based on this overconfidence, this restraint bias. If you look in the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, it says in Beis Dal, "Al tamen ba'atzmacha ad yom moscha." Don't believe in yourself. Don't have full faith in yourself until the day that you die. That sounds like sort of a counterintuitive message. You want to build people's confidence. You want people to think sort of highly of themselves so that they can act positively. But what this Mishnah is pointing out is that there is an element of overconfidence and that we should never have that overconfidence, especially when it comes to averos, when it comes to sins. And Rabbeinu Yonah spells it out. He says, "V'lo tomar kama yomim lo pa'alti avon, hechrachti et yitzri, v'ani yachol ala v'notzeacho." So don't say, look how long it's been. It's been 80 years. I haven't done the sin in 80 years. I've conquered that sin. My Yetzirah doesn't exist for that sin anymore. And I can beat it. Kfar nishbar v'anach, it's already broken. V'anach nimlatnu v'lo yuchol ahatosa min aderech ha'yishara. I'm never gonna fail. Look at this imagery. He says the Yetzer Hara is there. It's waiting to pounce. It's dancing in the background, waiting for you to let your guard down. And the second you let your guard down, it's going to try to overtake you. And this is the overconfidence. And what it's really a scary thought, but it's also a realistic thought. If we want to maintain change over time, we can never let our guard down. Once we let our guard down, there is a good chance that all of the habits, it's hardwired into our brain, all the bad habits that we have, we might try to overwrite them, but they're still there. And the second we let our guard down, it's ready to take us down. So not having that overconfidence. And it comes out in other places in Pirkei Avos as well. Perek Dal Mishnah Beis, Ben Azai tells us to run to a mitzvah, uvoreach min avera, get as far away from possible as a sin that you can. And the Sforno points out to the same exact message. Lachen yofa amarti shetia boreach min avera, velo tachshov lenimna shetichshaba uvenimshach mimena ke'inyan shlomo. Don't think that you're good, I'm done, I can beat it, I can overcome it. That overconfidence of the Yetzirah is something that Shlomo HaMelech did. He was too overconfident. He said, that's not going to apply to me. I can overcome that barrier. And he didn't, and he failed. The second we're overconfident, the Yetzirah is going to get us. And then finally, Harchek Mishachin Rav, Al Titchaber LaRasha, as we saw before, stay away from a bad neighbor. Don't connect to a wicked person. And then the Mishnah finishes off, Al Tityaesh Min HaPuranut. Don't give up from negative things happening, from destructive forces. What does that mean? Don't give up from destructive forces. So some understand that it's a very positive message in the sense that no matter what happened to you, never give up hope, always feel like you can be resilient. And there's truth to that. And that's a very important message. But if you look at the Yaivitz here, what the Yaivitz explains is that what it means is that you might have done what we've already stated were important strategies to maintain change. Harchek mishachin ra. Don't go next to people. Control your environment. Don't have bad social pressures. Do all of that. But you might think, he says, once I do that, once I control my environment, then I'm good. I'm not going to fail. I'll stick to my convictions. But he says, no. Even if you do harchek mishachin ra, and al titchaber l'rasha, even if you develop your social situations in a way that's effective, al titya'esh min ha'pranot means don't be overconfident that bad things won't happen, because they will. It's much more negative of a spin, but that's the message of this overconfidence, is that once we let our guard down, we are susceptible to falling backwards into our old patterns. And that's really what I think from Chazal's perspective, and it comes up in the stages of change model as well, is one of the biggest challenges to maintaining our tshuva process. Because I believe this is what happens. We change. Maybe we did our preparation stage well. Maybe we did our action phase well for a month, for a week, for 2 weeks, for a month. And then we get overconfident. We let our guard down and we say, it's not worth the effort. It's not worth the time. I can do it now. I'm good. And then we end up going back to our original habits. And that leads us to the final section here of relapse. What happens once we do relapse? And they added in the stages of change model relapse as part of the model, because most people don't change the first time they try to change. Actually, the statistics say that only around 20% of people change the first time around. Otherwise, it's a continual process. You change, you fail, you change, you fail. So it's important to, if we do fail and go back to our old habits, avoid black and white absolutist thinking, I failed, I'm a failure, I'm done, I have no chance. Slips are common. Lapse is not a relapse. Just because you mess up once doesn't mean you're back to square one. You can continue with a lot of the progress you've already made if you don't totally give up hope every time we mess up, because messing up is part of the process. As the Pasuk in Mishlei says, that we'll fall seven times, but you get back up, because failure is part of the process of growth, and that's required. It's part of the change process. So we're going to fail at some point in time, but it's important when we do to go back to all the strategies and restart, not from scratch, because we've already gained something. Don't give up hope and go so far back where you will have to start from scratch, but get yourself back up and continue the change process. Change is complicated. It's a winding path. And this is a scary number, but it's realistic. And because of that, it's worth saying, is that they say that it usually takes around 6 months in maintenance for a chance at lasting change. 6 months. I don't think most people keep that in mind. I think most people think that if I put a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks in, there are even some sources that say you put a month in, 30 days, you have some sort of momentum. It might be more than that. And that means not letting our guard down for 6 months. That's a long time. But it requires continual reminders, continual getting ourselves to commit and recommit to our goals, because that's the only way change is going to happen. Change is not easy. Change takes a long time, and it takes our full energy and time and commitment for us to make this lasting change. One more source to close off with. The Rambam here says something what's pretty scary, that calls into question our whole message that relapse is part of the tshuva process. Because the Rambam says, as part of tshuva is Ya'id Alav Yodea Ta'alumos Shelo Yashuv Lezeh Hachit La'olam. That Yodea Ta'alumos, the one who knows what is hidden, what is secret, which is alluding to God, God will testify that when you do your tshuva, that you will never sin again. That's part of the regular tshuva process, according to the Rambam. That's a pretty high standard. That when I do tshuva, if tshuva is to count, it must be that God's going to testify that I will never do it again. So what happens if I do it again? If we're saying that it's probably going to happen, most of us will do tshuva and then fall backwards. So is the Rambam saying that's not tshuva because God's not going to be able to testify? You're never going to be able to do it again? So two reflections. Number one, Rav Sadja Gaon disagrees. Rav Sadja Gaon spells out here the exact opposite of the Rambam. And he says that when somebody sins and he does tshuva and he fully commits to tshuva at the time, his tshuva is accepted. But let's say im tasiyehu ataiva achar kein l'shanos, he does it again because he falls in, because it's too big of a challenge. Ein tshuva so nifsedes, he doesn't lose that first tshuva. His first tshuva is fully functional. He now has to do another tshuva for the second sin that he did, but his first tshuva is fully there. So that's a little bit of a different spin. The Rambam seems to be saying you can't sin ever again. God has to testify that you can never sin again. So you can either go with Rav Sadja Gaon, or you can reread the Rambam. And the Sichos Musar of Chaim Shmulevitz reads it this way, is that it doesn't say Yodea Alav, Ya'ir Alav Yodea Ha'asidos, that God who knows the future will say that you will never sin again. Because perhaps God is aware of human frailty, and he knows, obviously, that there's a high chance that we're going to sin again. What God is, Yodea Ta'alumos, is he knows what's hidden, meaning he knows what's hidden inside of us. He knows our commitment. He knows our thought process. And as long as when we are doing tshuva, we are fully committed, and this is what we want, and we are going to try as hard as we can to do it. If we slip up, yes, that's part of the process, but we need to get back on and we need to keep trying and we need to keep doing tshuva for that. And that's something that's to be expected. And that doesn't mean we're failures. It doesn't mean that we've never done tshuva. So to close out, we've seen five, if you include relapse, six stages of change. This takes a long time. It takes a lot of effort. It doesn't just happen, even though we explained it within a model of the Yamim No Ra'im, starting from Elul and going to to Sukkot, to maybe Hanukkah. That's just a model. Change is not so linear. Change is not so easy, and it takes time. It takes commitment. My hope is that through reviewing these processes and these strategies, we can gain some clear vision of what we need to do if we want to change. And I encourage all who are serious about changing to get a book, get a psychology book, get a tshuva book, get a mussar book, and really sincerely plan out how we're going to do this. Look and learn from the mistakes that we've made in the past, and look and learn from the wisdom of our Jewish tradition, and look and learn from the experience and the experiments and the research of the people who spend full time studying this in the psychology world. And by doing that, hopefully we can have a meaningful tshuva process, whether it's during Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, or throughout the rest of the year. My hope is that we can all learn and grow together to do a tshuva shlema and experience a wonderful, uplifting, and meaningful Rosh Hashanah. Hope everybody has a ksiva v'chasima tova.